and open a public hearing on House Bill 2004. And Mary Botkin, if you're ready to come up, I understand that you want to give some testimony today and have a time crunch issue. The chair always wishes to accommodate. Yep. The speaker's just going back to her office because she just left mine, so.
I was going to clean up after AOI.
Well, you might go to your appointment and we may be done. Mm-hmm. We're so efficient.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Botkin. I'm here today representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We represent about 22,000 public employees around Oregon in state and local government. Let me start by saying that we understand the importance of updating the actuarial tables. And in fact, have worked with other members of the public employee unions to try to come up with some solutions that we feel are less litigious, if you will, than other solutions that have been presented. And we continue to be committed to those solutions as a way of not only updating the current actuarial tables, but actually moving the fix on into the future in a manner which would allow us to automatically keep the actuarial tables updated on a fairly regular basis. And, you know, as you know, Mr. Chair, we've been working with you through the interim, and we will continue to do so with your committee now. Our concern is more about how actuarial tables are implemented and the timing of them and the certainty of that implementation and the certainty of the date. A couple of my colleagues alluded at the last hearing about the problems that we're all facing with the disruption of the workforce and not knowing exactly what to do, when to do it, or how to get it done, and trying to decide if they should get out now or if they should wait. And, you know, I guess I have kind of developed the three questions that they have to ask themselves. And I always tell our members that you have to answer each question with an unequivocal yes. And if you can answer each question yes, then you need to get out. And the three questions are, one, are you eligible? Two, can you afford to live on the benefit that will be paid to you? And three, are you ready to leave? And if those answers are all yes, then you should get out. But in many cases, our folks just simply aren't ready to leave yet. They haven't finished their career. And I think it's important that we remind the committee that a lot of our members went into public service not to make money, but because they believe in what they do. And it's hard for them to just kind of walk away without looking back and saying, you know, I haven't finished what I came here to accomplish. And I think that the disruption in the workplace has been real evident in the last, especially the last 6 months. And I go out and do worksite meetings all the time. I can tell you that the number one issue in front of people is, are they going to take away the retirement benefits I have? So we encourage the committee, as you deliberate through this process, that you remember that there are folks out there who aren't going to retire at more than they make, and that those folks really are in the majority, and that the people who are benefiting from the, quote, exorbitant retirement benefits that you talk about or that you hear about or that you see reported in the paper are not the folks providing services by and large. They are people who have either, one, been there a really long time, or who are at the very top of the scale. And, you know, generally those aren't our people. And, you know, when push comes to shove and somebody has to really provide the services that you all fund, it is our members who are on the front lines. And this is a very disruptive process, and if we could, at the risk of having you move something quickly that I don't want you to move, if you could move as quickly as possible while making cautious decisions, it would be helpful, because I do think we need some stability in the system, and we need some stability in the decision-making process that you all are struggling with. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do you guys have the... You don't have corrections officers in Eastern Oregon, do you?
Oh, yes.
You do? Okay. Yeah.
They're very cranky these days, in case you've missed that part, but I bet you haven't.
The reason I ask is because I know some of the folks who are out there, and actually related to one who retired after his second career and 15 years, and you know, that benefit was, I think, somewhere around $1,000 a month. So, you know, clearly his retirement wasn't exorbitant, but I understand what you're saying about your members and how they're not necessarily the higher tier of folks.
You know, I have more folks that look like the person you're talking about than I do folks who are making 2.5 times their final average salary. You know, those people just aren't in the bargaining units.
Questions for Mary? Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perfect timing.
Jack?
Mr. Chairman, for the records, I'm Jack Solitz. I'm the Secretary Treasurer of Oregon PERS Retirees, Inc., and I represent about 10,000 retirees. Two points I'd like to make. One, when Mr. Geary was talking about contract rights, when they were talking about being retroactive, he was in the wrong ballpark on contract rights. This is not an ongoing contract when you retire. It's a completed contract. And I very much doubt if even the court or the legislature can open up a completed contract that was completed by mutual agreement between the parties in good faith. And that's why I think retroactivity would create some bountiful legislation and a lot of lawyers that get rich. Secondly, Mary mentioned it briefly, how does somebody retire with 105% of their final average salary? There are over 50,000 inactive members of PERS that can't get out until they reach retirement age. Somebody works for 10 years for the state, quits, his money's in there, he goes to work in the private sector for 30 years. Say he had $10,000 in the fund. In 9 years, it's $20,000. Another 9 years, it's $40,000. Another 9 years, it's $80,000. But his final average salary is 30 years old. That's why he gets 105%. Second reason, she mentioned, 40 years of service. When I retired in 1988, a friend of mine and I were making the same salary. He had 39 years, I had 28. He got $1,300 a month more back then than I did because of his longevity. And as far as my qualifications to deal with this, I'm a retired assistant attorney general, spent 28 years there, and my specialty was contracts. I started writing them when I first went to work, and later on was the head of a unit that approved all contracts for the state of Oregon, so I'm fairly familiar with contract law. The third way they get there is during the 5 years when distributions were going out the door at 20%, it only takes a couple, 3 years to double your account. If you double your account, your pension is going to be more than your final average salary. Nobody did anything wrong. But that's the way it is. Money match, they scream about that. Originally, that was the only option you had. Repealed in 67, reenacted in 69. 8% guarantee, enacted by the legislature in 75. So all the problems that PERS has are not really merely the responsibility of the board. They're the statutes that have been passed over the years. And believe me, there's no chapter more difficult to read than the PERS. And those are the things that I think are important. If the implementation of the tables is given 90 or 120 days after the implementation of the law and there's a look back in it, that's fine. But I think those are essential.
Thank you. Questions for Jack? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Joe Schwinnett?
For the record, my name is Joe Schweinhart, Associate Oregon Industries. We're the oldest and largest business association in the state. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'll just take a few minutes. I just wanted to say that we firmly believe that the Oregon business wants reform in PERS. They want strong reform in PERS, and that the business supports the immediate implementation of these tables. We feel like this is part of the accountability of such issues that Oregonians really are looking for from the legislature. And we honestly feel that the legislature has responsibility to take action to make these reforms, regardless of the threats of court action. And we greatly support your efforts, not only on this particular bill, but the past few bills and some of the ones we've seen coming up in the future. That's basically all I have to say, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you, Joe. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Fred Andrews.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the committee, my name is Fred Andrews. I live in Eugene. I'm a professor emeritus of mathematics at the University of Oregon and a PERS retiree. Although I am here as an observer for the Lane County PERS Retirees Association, the following remarks are my own. And these are generated just by sitting and listening to some of the testimony and conversation that I've heard in previous hearings of this committee. Number one, I believe it would be prudent for the Oregon legislature to instruct the PERS board to make early future implementation of currently dated mortality tables, but it would not be fair to post-date the implementation. Persons who have chosen retirement during the past few years, during the past few weeks, have undoubtedly made their decisions after considering projections furnished them by the PERS administration. It would be unfair to enforce lower benefits upon them after retirement. Number two, some persons have argued here that allowing a small window in which eligible employees could choose retirement might cause early loss of valuable employees. Such loss could be softened by offering a retiring employee a short post-retirement appointment, which is allowed under current PERS rules. For example, an early retiring teacher could be offered a post-retirement appointment through the end of the school year. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Fred. Any questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one brief question, and that is, here's a man after my heart. Here's a professor of mathematics, and I did really well at math as long as I could count on my fingers and toes, Mr. Chair. But I just had a concern about the statement being made relative to those folks who have chosen retirement during the past few weeks, and holding them to something that I think the Lipscomb decision was abundantly clear on. My concern is, Professor Andrews, if somebody picked up their bank statement one day and it had an extra $20,000 deposit to it, and they said, "Well, I think I need to jump right on that and make sure I get that drawn out and go on a vacation," if that was an erroneous deposit, would that make it any different than really taking some money that didn't belong to them?
Well, if it was erroneous, you're right, but I don't think that the fact that someone has retired January 1st of this year, if you folks implement the new tables and change the rate of annuities starting, say, 1st of January, this person's been already retired for 4 weeks and retired under an implied contract for the higher amount than the new tables would supply. Well, and I just don't think you should go back and make there's only a few people involved in the first place.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that comment. I guess my concern still is that whether this happened to 10 people, that they got some extra contributed to their account or added to their bank account that didn't belong there or should not have belonged there. And the other issue, it doesn't make it right because a whole bunch of people took advantage of the bank of their error, if in fact it was an error. And that was the only point I wanted to make, is that if a whole bunch of people did it versus just one person that saw it and everybody else turned the money back, to me it looks like it's the same thing, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that the judge's decision was pretty abundant. It said immediate and full, and I just fear making it anything less than moving forward with what the judge directed, and maybe that's the reason why a whole bunch of people jumped out after the judge made the decision, was figuring that there were other folks saying, let's not make it immediate and let's not make it full implementation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I was not trying to address any errors here.
Thank you, Fred. I appreciate that. Okay. Oh, Fred, I think there's another question. Representative Barker.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Yes.
Professor, if I was going to retire today under PERS, and they said, you know, there may be a reduction based on a January 1st date, are you saying that would be different than from me, say, if I had chosen to retire January 3rd and PERS said you will get $3,000 a month for life, and now that we're now... And then today I learned that, well, maybe we're going to go back to January 1st and cut that. Is that, do you see a difference between those two things?
Oh, yes, I think so. And it's in the prerogative of the legislature to set the date. And I was just saying that I don't think it would be fair to post-date it back, because people are making decisions based upon the information that they get by asking the PERS board. And it's a board that's responsible to the legislature. And so in that sense, they're asking the state of Oregon government to advise them. And if the date's post-dated, it seems to me that they've gotten erroneous advice.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Fred. Michelle Dicer. While Michelle actually is passing out her papers, I have some testimony I needed to enter into the record, and that was Wally Curtis had dropped off some testimony, and I think that is on your desk there, and so we'll enter Wally Curtis's testimony into the record for him. Michelle.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Michelle Dicer with the League of Oregon Cities, and today I'm here speaking to you on behalf of four local government associations, including LOC, the Association of Oregon Counties, the Oregon School Boards Association, and the Special Districts Association of Oregon. What is being passed out to you is a copy of the written comment that we provided to the PERS board on their draft administrative rule with regard to implementation of the mortality tables for your information. And as you can see, we advocated at that time and continue to advocate for full and immediate implementation of the mortality tables pursuant to Judge Lipscomb's ruling. And we went on to say that unfortunately that is not an option that was contemplated in the board's rule, and should they continue to contemplate a look-back type of provision, there were certain things that we certainly hoped that they would consider with regard to that, and those are really outlined on page 2 of what I handed to you. And again, just so you folks are aware, we continue to advocate for full and immediate implementation of the mortality tables. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Michelle. I read your memo last night, and I found it to be very helpful, so I appreciate that. Any questions? Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify on the mortality table issue? No? Okay. Now comes the lecture. And I can do this because I have a gavel. And you have a week
employers and employees to find a solution. If we don't find a solution by next Thursday that's been brought to us, and I hold out slim hope, but we'll continue to hold out hope that you may be able to reach some agreement. The committee will ultimately make the decision. We will move forward, and probably it is unlikely that either side will completely like the outcome of what we do. So I would encourage you to cooperate as much as possible with each other. We're going to continue to work this through. The committee has, I know members are meeting with each other, not in a quorum, but in one or two, and talking over the different options. It's obviously a very complicated issue. I can tell you what I will not do, and I will not accept the PERS board's recommendation. And to me, that issue is not on the table. So I would suggest no one bring that one forward. But we will find a solution, and I would hesitate to say that I won't go retroactively, but I'm inclined not to do that. I've talked with the governor a bit on his January 1st date, and believe that he wants something that does not look like the PERS board's recommendation. So we need to find something in between what he has suggested and what the rest of the committee will find acceptable. I do want it to be as bipartisan as possible, so have looked for input from all the members of this committee. And I know Representative McPherson and Representative Richardson have been working together. We'll continue to do that and move concepts down to legislative council and see if we can't find something that we can put together that will work and that we can find 31 votes for in the House, which is the goal. We'd prefer to have 51, but know that the reality is that maybe because there isn't going to be complete and unanimous agreement among employers and employees that we may not be able to reach that. But I would suggest that no one make this their hill to die on, because there will be plenty of more of those hills for you this session. We are going to try to do our best to make sure that this particular issue is the best set of circumstances possible for the Supreme Court to ultimately make a decision on the mortality tables. But fear of litigation on this issue will not enter into the decision on what we ultimately choose, because there will be litigation on this issue. And I'm resigned to that fact. We all understand it, and we're going to move forward. So does anybody have any questions, either on the committee or any members who are interested in the audience? Okay. We look forward to, we of course have our meeting on Tuesday, and I believe the employers wanted to present some testimony on a plan that they've come up with. I may take up next week a bill by Representative Jensen that was passed last session. It is a minor bill that solves a problem for one individual as it relates to PERS. Was passed through the process and they thought it would work. It apparently did not. So we get to try it again. And I think it will be relatively painless. And I told Ms. Representative Jensen that I would try to put that on the calendar for next week. So that may be on the calendar for Thursday. And beyond that, I want to basically work through this mortality table issue next week after the employers present their plan on Tuesday. And I would hope to have something either next Thursday that we could work session, or the Tuesday following that we could work session. And it's my intent after that to move on to the new plan. So those of you who have decided to move on from here and either are going to declare victory on mortality tables, or going to declare defeat, or maybe you're going to fight on this, I don't know, but start planning for your recommendations for the new system, because we will have a new system. The governor has said we'll have a new system. I think the committee is generally agreeable that we need a new system, and we want to put that in place, and we want to do it as soon as possible. I think it's important that we work through this issue. I think as Mary and others said, Jack, to bring some certainty to the employee community who have PERS
retirements or are looking to retire, we're going to try to do our best not to cause people to rush toward the door. But that, in my view, is going to be very difficult to stop, because I think people are not necessarily acting on sound judgment. I think they're reacting somewhat on emotion, and I understand this can be a very emotional issue. But we're going to do everything we can to mitigate the rush toward the door, because it could be fairly damaging in some agencies if that were to occur. So with all those principles in mind and trying to adhere to what the governor laid out as his standards, we are going to move forward and look for something productive next week, and we'll continue to work on it until we can get some resolution and hopefully get a bipartisan vote out of this committee and a bipartisan vote off the floor. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing of House Bill 2004, and next time we come before you, it'll be for a work session. And if there's nothing further to come before the committee, committee is adjourned.
I'll let you talk to people.